This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
On a Friday here in New York City, Evan and Tiki on the Fan. And joining us right now, let's warm up a few degrees and talk to the manager of the New York Mets, who get set to play their first spring training game tomorrow. I cannot wait. Tiki can't wait. Tiki's scoring the game, he told me. He's so excited. Right?
I am not going to score that game.
Oh, that was me.
That's
I'm going to score the game. And here's the manager of that baseball team, the manager of the New York Mets, Carlos Mendoza. Mendy, Tiki, and Evan, how are you?
How you doing, guys? What's up, Evan?
We're good.
You got me laughing here. You going to keep track of that game tomorrow?
Oh, you do. Let me tell you something.
How many substitutions in the first two innings?
Yeah, give me a heads up so I get my hand ready for all the writing I'm going to do.
I'll take it easy on you and be ready, fourth inning.
All right, fourth inning, I'll be ready to go. I am curious, as someone with experience, so much experience growing up in the Yankee organization, what is your opinion on their big announcement today that they are changing their facial hair policy?
Good for them. That was my first reaction. Looks like this was something that they felt like they needed to do, and you got to give them credit. You know, respect that decision. That again, it's I guess what we're living on right now. So they're willing to make adjustments, and they made that decision, and respect that.
Did you ever get a vibe as a bench coach, maybe talking to players, maybe they feel they could be more honest with you, that they didn't like it? Like, were players ever complaining to you about that policy?
Well, they know what they signed up for, you know. From day one, you set the tone, and they know that's part of what they do. So, and then they police themselves. As a former coach, where I was in the minor leagues, and then at the big league level, I didn't find myself having issues with it. It was a simple signal. If, you thought somebody had it, was going over the line, but nothing crazy. So I didn't have bad experience with it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, now that you are your manager and you did a heck of a job last year, we talked about this a lot of times throughout the season, you should have been in the running for manager of the year, and we thought you should have won it, but that's neither here nor there.
Thank you.
The question is, when you think about imposing rules like that, not necessarily a beard policy, but just kind of any rules, don't do this, don't do that, what is your philosophy on it? And how do the players react to restrictions, so to speak?
Yeah, I'm not a rules guy. For me, it's just standards. You know, you set the standards and the expectations, and there's, a way of doing things, whether it's how you represent yourself, how do you represent the team, the organization, how you go about your business, how you play the game. So there's a level of expectations and standards that you set by actions. And if you start telling guys, hey, don't do this, don't do that, like, they're grown men here, and if we got issues, we're going to address that face-to-face internally. I got a really good leadership group that from the players' side of things, the coaches. We're not afraid to call each other out, but again, it's expectations and high standards. So that's how I go about our business here.
You talk about leadership. Obviously, one guy who has emerged as a captain of sorts is Francisco Lindor. Have you, David Stearns, and Steve Cohen had any conversations about making that official and naming Francisco Lindor a captain of the New York Mets?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I've had some conversations with David. I haven't had any of those with Steve. Not sure if David's had conversations with Steve, but me and David talk about it. We will continue to have those conversations. But look, he's already doing everything that a captain does, you know, with the way he goes about his business, his actions, everything that he does off the field, not to mention what he does on the field, but pushing guys, holding guys accountable, keeping it loose, keeping it fun. But when it's go time, you know, keeping it consistent. So that's what you want to see out of all of your players. And the fact that Francisco's right there at the top, but you got some other guys that they're willing to do whatever it takes, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
For me, he doesn't have the C on it, but he's doing a lot of the things that a captain will do.
Yeah, and he's even said, like, it wouldn't change his job at all. Do you see, though, that something being official before this season starts, or even during this season, him officially being that captain?
I don't know. For me, as I'm sitting here talking to you guys, again, this was maybe like an informal conversation with David during the off season. Then a week before we reported here, he came up again, but nothing formal, you know. So I don't know.
Well, having been in an organization that championed that in a sense with Jeter, as you know, and obviously Aaron Judge getting it right after he signed his contract, what does that mean? From you, from a fan standpoint and a media standpoint, we can talk about what the C means. But what did it mean for you as a manager having that bestowed upon one of your better players?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just more for you guys and for the fan base. For me, it's just
right.
For me, it's the same because he's just that, you know, like without the C on his chest. So. Like for me, nothing changes, to be honest with you. If there's something that it needs to be addressed, it's not only through Francisco, but he's a part of that conversation among the group from the player side of things. And again, I think it's just his actions speak for themselves, you know?
Right.
So as a manager, it doesn't change much, and I don't see it any different.
All right.
To be honest with you.
So this is your first couple of days of having, obviously, we haven't mentioned Juan Soto's name yet, but obviously it's one of the biggest free agent signings in Major League Baseball history. And we're talking about Francisco Lindor, and Evan and I got in a mini fight about a week ago because he was trying to marginalize Francisco
Lindor. I was not doing that. Don't say that in front of the manager
in light of Juan Soto's signing.
Come on.
I just like creating controversy.
I said Soto is better. That's all I said.
He's not better. Lindor is the captain. But anyways, what has it been like adding Juan Soto into this clubhouse? Forget what's going to happen on the field. But, I mean, what has it been like in the clubhouse with Juan Soto now there?
Oh, it's been great. And I think it's happening, developing a lot faster than I was anticipating it, to be honest with you. You know, it takes time. For this guy, he's been in a lot of different teams, and, you know, he's making that huge transition. Coming from the Yankees, now he's here with us, and he's going to be here for a long, long time, as we all know. You know, my first conversation with him was just be yourself. And to give him credit, he was like, hey, man, like, I'm trying to fit in. And he's human, you know, like people have to realize that these guys, they're humans, man, and they got feelings, and it's an adjustment. But what I'm seeing the past few days here is a guy that is very comfortable, is having fun. The connections, those relationships that you could see developing here in the locker room, in the cafeteria when we're having breakfast, lunch, during our meetings. This is a guy that as the days go by, he's getting comfortable, man. And it's good to see, you know, you watch him and he's smiling. He's, you know, making jokes with his teammates and he's competing out there. He's asking the right questions. So I'm encouraged, to be honest with you, because I thought it was going to take a lot more time. And we still got a few weeks here before we have to break camp. But what a great guy. And just watching him go about his business, his routine, his preparation, like, he's like, oh, wow, this guy's neat, so.
We are talking to the manager of the New York Mets, Carlos Mendoza. So one of the fun things you get to do is make a lineup with all these names in it. And obviously that's been great sports talk radio fodder. This guy should hit here. This guy should hit there. How much do you consider where the guy prefers to hit, like Juan Soto, when deciding ultimately what that opening day starting lineup looks like?
Man, like the lineup conversation is like every day. I think I got to throw it back at you. Like, what would you like to see?
Well, I'm going to tell you something, Mindy.
Look,
Mindy, he did this like 3 weeks ago.
I did it 3 weeks. I have an idea that everybody hates. So you have a chance as the manager of the Mets to confirm most Met fans' agreement that my idea is terrible. And you can say, Evan, thank you,
What's your idea?
I'm going to tell you right now, and then you could kill it. I'll never talk about it again if you just tell me, Evan, I'm not even considering it. I really am intrigued by Pete Alonso batting second and Juan Soto protecting him in that three-hole. Lindor, Alonso, and Soto. Have you given that any thought?
Nope.
Come on, man. So what are you considering? Go ahead.
I mean, it's 162 plus, hopefully, right? That's the goal. And who knows? But as I'm sitting here, and I've been playing around a lot of different lineups and how you envision it. Pete's between Lindor and sort of, I don't think I wrote that lineup yet.
Well, when you do, you can call it the Evan Roberts lineup.
He's not going to do it. I can tell him. Right.
But you know, how refreshing is the word? Was it to get Pete back? Because there was so much uncertainty around that. And was there ever a moment where you thought it wasn't going to happen?
Well, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. You know, he's out there. You know, he earned the right to go out and test the market. And we didn't know, to be honest with you. Yeah, we wanted him so bad, but. Again, and there's so much out there that you don't know what to believe. But as the manager, you know, as long as he was out there available, you know, I was like, we got a chance.
Right.
We got a chance. And that's how I treat it. I try not to drive myself crazy with everything that was going on, you know, all the rumors and this and that. Like, I was just waiting for that text or that phone call from David
right.
the whole time.
Well, you know, Mindy, I don't know the answer to this. Are you allowed to reach out to Pete? Could you have? And if you were,
yes, and I did. I did. I texted him, I think, right after the New Year's, just checking on him, you know, because, yes, I'm the manager, and I have a relationship with these guys, you know.
Right.
And I know when they're out there, they're going to make what's the best decision for them and their family. So I texted with him. He got back to me. And then I kind of like respected his space, you know. I didn't want to get too involved with it, but just as a manager, as a friend, how are you doing? How's your family? How's, you know, the off season going? Working out? Just things like that,
right.
But nothing like in details with contracts. And are you getting any off? None of that.
Nah, you didn't throw in. Hey, we really want you back.
Yeah,
man.
Please.
I know they're hardballing you, but we need you back, dude.
Do you notice a difference with Pete Alonso as compared to, because last year he comes in, it's a contract year, a lot of pressure. This year it's sort of a contract year, but he's also making $30 million. Is Pete exactly the same, or do you notice a difference in Pete Alonso as he enters camp?
Well, the difference is in BP. When I'm watching him take batting practice this year, like, he's launching balls.
Right. Right.
So, same guy. As far as the personality, same guy. Same personality, smiling, saying hi to people, having fun, working really hard, talking about winning, and that's who Pete Alonso is. You know, he step in the office first day here, and it's like, I'm ready to go, Skip. I'm like, same guy, you know.
Right. Nice. That's what we want to hear.
Right. Did you feel like he was playing tight last year? I know we speculated about
Not at all. I mean, this guy knows what it takes to play in New York, man. Mm-hmm. And yes, he's going on in a year that he's going to be a free agent. But look, I had front row seat when I was with the Yankees with Aaron Judge, and he was going to his free agent year. And I had a front row seat with Pete. Pretty similar with the way they went about their business. You know, it was all about winning.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
It's all about the team and what can I do today to help the team win a baseball game. And when it was hard for them, you know, they were so consistent. There was never panic. And that's what I saw out of Pete last year. And again, this week, same guy. So
we're talking to Carlos Mendoza. Obviously, Frankie Montas goes down with this injury. You've got Tyler McGill. You've got Griffin Canning. You've got Paul Blackburn. So you have options. Do you expect, or is it possible, that maybe Jose Quintana re-enters this mix? Is there interest in a reunion with Jose Quintana, from your understanding?
Yeah, I know there's a lot of rumors out there. Look, Q was really good for us last year, man. Like, he was a big part of this team, and, you know, he's out there. As far as, like, where we at, that's more for David, to be honest with you. You know, my job is to manage the 67 guys that I got here right now in camp.
Right.
And then, you know, getting with David as we progress here and cut down to 26 and take the what we feel is the best 26 guys going to Houston. So for Q, he's out there. So we'll see.
You are going with a six-man rotation. I've heard you say that as long as Kodai Senga is in the rotation. I've been curious. I've always been curious about this with six-mans. Would you feel on a given night with a starter that you would be more comfortable pushing that guy, maybe to throw a few more pitches knowing they're going to get an extra day of rest? Is that something that you would consider with a guy knowing, all right, well, he's got that extra day, maybe instead of 98, I'm going to push him to 105, 110. Is that a consideration with a six-man rotation?
Yes and no. I don't know about 105 and 110 in April or May, you know, definitely April, you know, when you got long ways to go, you're playing the long game. But as far as like, hey, pushing a guy because he's throwing the ball well, when you're watching him, the body language, how the ball's coming out, not just the result that he's getting, is how is the movement, how is the velo, talking to the guys in between innings. So there's a lot that I take into consideration before I'm making these decisions and these final calls. So everything's on the table. You know, that's, you know, I prepare a lot before the game. I have a lot of information with me, but once the game starts, I'll let it develop and then I adjust accordingly. And that's part of, you know, getting to know your players and when to push them and when to just pull the trigger. So, as far as like the six men, yes, with Senga, but there's also especially like at the beginning of the season where we have 3 days off.
Right.
You know, we're still having those discussions here whether we want to go with six. Do we want to go with like a piggyback type deal with one of the starters? Mm. We still got so much, we got ways to go
right
before we're making these decisions. So we just got to keep them healthy, which that's the case right now. The news from Montas early in camp, you know, a little disappointed, but, you know, we got options, we got good depth, and we just got to keep it that way.
Yeah, the Montas news is disappointing, and I know he's disappointed as well, wanting to make a better first impression. But, you know, given him being out, obviously Kodai Senga didn't pitch a lot last year, really not really at all. You have a reliever converting to a starter in Clay Holmes. How are you feeling about your rotation?
I feel pretty good. Again, Senga is a big part of our rotation. I saw it from the other dugout, but when he's healthy, he's an ace, you know, and we got to keep it that way. We were able to bring back Sean Manaea, who was our ace last year. So those two at the top of the rotation. And then, you know, David Peterson was really good and very consistent for us last year. So that's another guy. Clay Holmes, I'm excited about Clay. You know, we know as a reliever, this guy was a two-pitch guy. You know, the sinker, slider, very effective against right-handed hitters. Now he's playing around with the cutter. He's playing around with the changeup. He's pitching tomorrow, even, so you're going to be watching.
I'm ready.
I'm looking forward to watching face other hitters, not just our hitters in live BP, and how he's going to use that pitch or those pitches. Because in order for him to make that transition effectively, he's going to need more than two to get through a lineup at least twice. So he's in a good place physically. The ball's coming out well. So I'm excited about that. And then we got some other options, you know, Griffin Canning, Paul Blackburn, Tyler McGill. So we got depth, and we just got to be creative here as we get closer to opening day.
Now I'm going to knock on wood. When I ask this question, because obviously guys have to stay healthy. But are you ready on February 21st to make it official? And that is Sean Manaea is your opening day starting pitcher. Are you ready to do it, Carlos?
No, I'm not ready to do that. You just said it. February 21st. I mean, we still got, what, 6-7 weeks? Guys are still building up. Sean threw his live BP yesterday, 2 innings. Was feeling good today. So we got to see him, you know, pitching games. How is he going to bounce back? And, like, knock on wood, you know, keep him that way. And then we will have to make some of those decisions, and the opening day starter is one of them.
Am I on the right track with that, though? Because you mentioned ace twice with Senga and Manaea, and you're right. Like, 2 years ago, Kodai was tremendous. And obviously last year, Sean really turned into, pound for pound, I think, the best pitcher you guys had. So am I right that if all things are equal and everybody's healthy, that Manaea is going to get that slight edge over Senga with that opening day honor?
We'll see, because, I mean, they're in a different program right now. Like, it's too early. Like, once we get, you know, that second week, first 10 days of March, that you start kind of like lining up their outings and, okay, let's start working backward. But so right now, it's just more the live VPs, the ups and downs and things like that. So I would say, you know, within the first 10 days of March, that's when you start thinking, okay, we need to start putting these guys on schedule here and go from there. So, but too early still.
All right, we're real quick about this. This is getting in the weeds, but I'm so curious because I'm analyzing who I think is going to make the whole roster and all that. Do you guys need a backup shortstop? Because I'm looking at that last utility spot, and it could be Brett Beatty, who's not a shortstop, Jared Young, who's not a shortstop, Nick Madrigal's learning shortstop, and obviously Luis Angel Acuña, who can play shortstop. Is it essential in your mind as manager to have a guy that can be a backup shortstop, or would you be comfortable going to opening day without having a guy on this roster, not named Lindor, who's played the position?
Yeah, look, as a manager and for us as an organization, the conversation's been, you know, God forbid something happened to Lindor, you need someone to go out there and play, say, 4 innings, 3 innings. You know, it's a blowout and you want to get Francisco off his feet. You want to make sure you feel comfortable who's playing the last couple of innings of a game, right? That's for me. That for us, that's basically, you know, the conversation is: can we trust this guy to play and finish to finish a game? Now, if Lindor needs a couple of days, or if, you know, God forbid, he's down for an extensive period of time, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. But we do feel good. We mentioned Acuña, Madrigal. Brett Beatty is going to start at third and second. He's getting just work there during batting practice. Not sure we'll see him in games, especially this early. Now, we get to the middle of March, and we want to see him, and he's comfortable, and he's ready to go for a game action. sure, we could put him out there because he's part of that competition. So to answer that question, someone that at least can give you a few innings, maybe a game if needed, but if he's an extensive absence from Lindor, then you're looking at somebody that can really give you a chance and hold the position.
Yeah. Now Evan likes to get into the weeds, and you know that's a very in the weeds question. But I want to get a little macro with you, Skip. So last season, I talked to Evan every single week about how this is evaluation season for the Mets. They're trying to see what they have in positions. Pete Alonso's obviously in a contract year. You were in your rookie season as a manager. Let's just figure out what we have here. You ended up getting to the NLCS, which is, I think, far exceeding anybody's wildest dreams, and it was awesome. What is your expectation going into this season in the first few days of spring training?
My expectations were the same as last year, is to win a championship. Last year, you know, people outside of the locker room, they were, you know, oh, this is a transition. We knew we were good. We knew, and we kept saying it. You know, we feel like we have a team that is going to be able to go out there and compete for a playoff spot, and that's what you want. Mm. And this year is not different. You know, we got Toto, and we got Manaea, we got Pete, and we added some other faces here. And everybody now is talking about the Mets and the expectations and this and that. Embrace it. You know, this is a great opportunity that we got in here. We have a chance to do something special, and that's how I see it. My expectation is to win a championship.
I love it.
Love to hear it. Now, it felt like Jose Iglesias and J.D. Martinez were very important to that room. Mm-hmm. Obviously, J.D. came in kind of middle of April after the signing. Iglesias gets called up in late May, that they were very important in that room. They're both not here. I don't think either one's going to come back. I guess it could happen with Iglesias. Who the heck knows? But do you feel the locker room is different, significantly different, without those leaders in there in J.D. and Jose?
No, I think it's different in a good way because they learned so much from Iglesias and JD last year. Mm-hmm. You said it, they were key guys to our success last year as a team, as an organization. When those guys came in, they kind of created that environment along with some of the other guys, but because of the experience, especially a guy like JD who's been in so many different winning teams and know what a winning looks like, feels like. It was important, and everybody learned from that, you know, and you could see it in this early going here in spring training where it's guys are loose, they're having fun, but man, they're working, and they're working the right way. They're working in the details, the fundamentals, bouncing ideas off each other. So those are some of the things that they learned from those two guys. Like I said, they were a big influence on our clubhouse. But now there's different guys in there that learn and are ready to take on that role and teach some of the new faces and some of the new guys that are here for the first time, our standards and the way we go about our business here.
Right. You have a good combination of vets and some of these younger players like Mark Vientos, et cetera, who are going to step up and become, I think, household names for a lot of years. This is a question more from a fan evaluation of your competition standpoint. I mean, obviously you guys spent a ton of money with Juan Soto bringing in for $700+ million. But when you look at a team like the Dodgers, who seem to spend indiscriminately, does it feel, I don't know, like there's a bar that you can't reach with them? You know what I mean? Like they're going to go get the best players. They seems like they're signing every single one of these posted Japanese starting pitchers.
Yeah, we're going after the best players too.
Yeah, you definitely are. But can you go after that many? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I mean, we can be worried about. Yes, we're watching. We know what's going on, but we're trying to be the best version of ourselves. You know, we're trying to create something here special too. It takes time. Look, I mean, the Dodgers got here, and they've been what 10, 12 years of consistent playoff appearances and things like that. It takes time, you know, and we're watching, but we're not worried about them. You know, our job is to build a first-class organization that is going to put together a team that is going to compete for championships year after year. And that's our goal, and, you know, that's what we're going for. Yes, good for the Dodgers, but we're the Mets, and we're doing our own thing here.
No, can't wait to watch. Tomorrow is the first game, even if it doesn't count. I got my scorebook ready. I'm ready to roll to watch Clay Holmes get his three ups or whatever we do. And we'll have some fun. Carlos, we appreciate you coming on, and good luck.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks, Tiki.
Thank you, Carlos.
There he is, the manager.
All right, guys.
Thank you, man. The manager of the New York Mets, Carlos Mendoza.